Izamit Carr, and I'm Telly Concepcion, and together we are Beyond the Numbers Podcast. We go beyond the numbers of sports and life to bring you the story within the story of the stories that matter. So come learn, grow, and have some fun with us. We are Beyond the Numbers Podcast.
On today's episode, the guys send off the NBA in style with their final edition of NBA Bubble News, where they go beyond the numbers of the logistics involved in pulling off the NBA bubble. They dish on the wine clubs formed in the bubble and hand out their NBA Bubble Awards. In NFL Nuggets, they go beyond the numbers of Week 5 of the 2020 NFL season and wish BTN favorite Dak Prescott a speedy recovery. But first, their numbers of the day.
My number of the day is 5, as in the Astros are 5-5 in franchise history in winner-take-all postseason games. They lost their last one, which was Game 7 of the 2019 World Series, after winning each of their previous three. The last time Houston won a winner-take-all game was a Game 5 of the ALDS in 2019 against your Tampa Bay Rays.
My number for today is 3. More specifically, 3-0. The Rays started 3-0. Charlie Morton is pitching tonight. He's 3-0 in closeout games with an ERA of 0.64. Before the business, Beyonders, it's time for Before the Business, where we answer your unanswered questions and find the numbers that went unfound in previous episodes. So shout out here to Natalie, my sister, who hooked me up with a new microphone. So if I sound a little bit different, you guys know why. Ahmed and I spent the last few minutes testing out the new mic. So it definitely does sound a little different though.
Yeah, you took the bass out of the voice a little bit.
So we're here in the 30th episode. We're rolling and we're upgrading, changing out parts. So yeah, there you go. New mic. We try to keep these fun, but we do have a heartbreaking update here regarding Dak Prescott. And as you guys know, you've been rocking with us. He has been a Beyond the Numbers favorite. In BTN 15, we talked specifically about Dak Prescott calling his shot, betting on himself, Amit, with his next NFL contract with the Dallas Cowboys, and how the Cowboys and Jerry Jones forced him to sign a one-year deal under the franchise tag, giving him no long-term deal to secure his future. And now, I mean, I've never felt the way I felt after I saw what happened Sunday.
Even as a Giants fan, that was tough to watch him go down like that. And you're right, over the past few weeks, and specifically last week, we dubbed Dak Pay That Man Prescott as his new nickname, and he was earning every bit of a new long-term deal coming into last week. But, you know, the danger of a franchise tag and a one-year deal and not having that long-term security is you may get injured. So I know the two of us are looking into the details behind, you know, how that plays out regarding his rehab, and will he be able to use NFL facilities, and will he specifically be able to use Cowboys facilities, and what that does to his current contract? Is it just pushed another year?
We did have a nice conversation as we were doing our pre-production meeting yesterday, and we do feel it's important to cover those aspects because, like we said, beyond the numbers, we want to go beyond just stats and highlights and wins and losses. But now that he is hurt, obviously he's out for the season. It's a 4 to 6 month recovery timetable. We're not even sure if he'll be able to return to play football. They haven't revealed too many details about the specifics of the injury other than it's a compound fracture of the ankle. His surgery was successful. He was released from the hospital. He's home. He's doing well. We pray for his full recovery. Now what? You know, how does this affect his contract? How does this affect his status with the Dallas Cowboys and his rehab? Is it team doctors? Is it personal care that he has to pay for out of pocket and those things? So we'll try to dig on those and get back to you guys with that.
Switching gears, Telly, I know this next segment is tough for you. Man. Because the mantra this year was anyone but the Lakers.
Anyone.
So because I know it's tough and going through tough things makes you stronger, I'm going to let you take this
one. Congratulations to the Los Angeles Lakers, winners of the 2020 NBA Finals. No surprise here. We told you in BTN 28 that LeBron chose the team he wanted to face, and that team, the Miami Heat, had the longest odds to win the NBA Finals in 2020, entering the season at 75-1 odds. So it was almost a foregone conclusion that the Lakers were to win this season. I'm happy they did it for Kobe. That was a silver lining. You know, I think we all had that in mind, that with Kobe's tragic passing, may he rest in peace, the Lakers could get the job done and honor him with this season. My surprise, though, Amit, was just I watched the confetti fall. I watched the win happen, and LeBron talked about respect. I need respect, but he didn't mention Kobe Bean Bryant, and that broke my heart a little bit. Amit, you, my friend, tip of the cap, predicted Lakers in six and ended up getting it right.
Yeah, but you know what? You got one that I think to me means a little more, and that goes back to baseball. You got your Tampa Bay Rays.
The Rays! I don't want to, you know, I was hoping, we're recording this. We got to let the people know, man. We're recording this Thursday, October 15th. I was hoping Beyonders to come on here today and have some news to share, but the job's not done. So you know what? I'm going to wait. We need one more win. The game's actually starting now. We're recording at 2:05 on the West Coast, so the game's starting up. So we'll see how it goes, but let's go Rays. We're on our way to that COVID triple crown, that Tampa triple crown. We're still in contention, and I still got us going all the way. Rays up.
I think the Rays will be competitive, but don't forget about the Dodgers, the National League juggernaut. Everyone had the Dodgers kind of whimpering away because of how strong that Braves rotation is. And then all of a sudden,
Hold on, I gotta. Now you sound like LeBron. Ain't nobody disrespecting the Dodgers. And ain't nobody saying the Braves were better than the Dodgers. The Dodgers were the first place team all season long. And I think the only person I saw that picked the Braves over the Dodgers is Pedro Martinez on TBS. Everybody and they mama picked the Dodgers.
But if you look at all the analytics, all the projection models, it's like 73% for the Braves going into that series because of their pitching.
So we'll see how it shakes up. That's the World Series nobody wants. Rays and Braves. Rays and the Braves.
I mean, one way or another, you're going to have a new champion, right?
There will be a new champion, and we're excited for that.
So it'll be fun. Switching gears, college football, my friend. This is your wheelhouse. It's been an interesting
football season.
There's many things to say there.
I just don't even know where to start. I mean, Beyonders, we're family by now. You know, we're 30 episodes deep. You know, you guys, we're all together in this. We're family. My Florida Gators, I'm it. 21 positive COVID tests. No college football for us this week. We've already shared with you guys how we feel about forcing these kids to play with COVID, to play during this pandemic time. And my Gators now don't have enough players to field against LSU this weekend. We were ready for that game. And I think Dan Mullen, coach, started talking out the side of his mouth on it because he was emotional after the loss. I cannot talk during game days because I'm liable. I stopped tweeting during games because, you know, it's a very emotional time. LSU is now 1-2. And the last time LSU had a losing record beyond the first game of the season was in 1999.
They also lost a ton of their talent last year. So in some ways it makes sense, but it's definitely been a rough stretch.
And Alabama, Nick Saban now has improved to 21-0 against his former assistants. Although the Ole Miss game was very, very close and a little too close because now he's got the COVID and won't be coaching from the sideline this week.
That's true. Him and their athletic director both have COVID. So we hope they both get better soon. But the interesting part before that was Saban didn't go as far, but pretty much said that Lane Kiffin was stealing signs. I think it would have been more fun if Kiffin came out and said, yeah, we've been stealing them. Good luck. So then they'd have to go back and change everything, kind of get in his head.
Now let's get back to the business. So, Amit, it's time for our new segment, News from the NBA Bubble.
Bubble news.
Yeah.
Bubble news.
Bubble news. So, this is our last installment of NBA Bubble News. It was one of our favorite segments of 2020. We had a blast doing this segment. We wanted to do it one last time to put a bow on the NBA season that's now over. So let's go beyond the numbers of the NBA bubble. Our numbers for this piece, 100, 4,000, 88, 6, 3, and 0. And that sounds like the most random collection of numbers. 100 is the approximate number of days spent in the NBA bubble. It went for approximately 100 days. 4,000 is the number of meals that were cooked for the players each week. Rather than jump directly into the playoffs, the NBA scheduled 88 seeding games, 8 each for 22 teams, and established a way for the 6 invited teams who were outside the playoff picture when the season was put on hold to play themselves in. 6 is the number of barbers they brought in. 3, the number of stylists and manicurists to make the guys feel comfortable on site at the bubble. And 0, the number that is most important here because it is the number of positive COVID tests that the NBA had during that approximate 100 days in the NBA bubble.
So how do we get here? On March 11th, the season canceled and the solution was the bubble. The first players arrived on July 7th, and the 2019-2020 season has come to an end more than one full year after teams reported to training camp, with the Los Angeles Lakers claiming their 17th championship and tying for number of championships with the Boston Celtics. Where did all this happen? It was Walt Disney World Resorts in Lake Buena Vista, Florida. Players, coaches, and staffers for 22 teams, not to mention the league staffers and media members, all uprooted their lives to spend months away from home. All 22 teams were checking in for a stay of at least 6 weeks, and for 2 of them, the bubble would be the only place they'd visit for more than 3 months, Telly.
That's a long time to be away from friends, family, and basically to be isolated. So shouts out to Adam Silver on this one. 0 positive tests. Shouts out to the NBA. And I think we have to give a shout out too. We got to give a shout out to the NHL, who also pulled off a nearly flawless bubble, bringing hockey back and leading to my Tampa Bay Lightning winning the Stanley Cup. We got to see behind the scenes of the bubble thanks to our favorite bubble player. Shouts out to Matisse Thybulle. He gave us daily testing updates, how the wearing of monitors and masks work, how they screened everyone coming in and out of different facilities in the bubble. So shouts out to Matisse for letting us see some of the behind the scenes and getting that perspective firsthand since he was there.
So let's look at some of the logistics that we were able to dig up. So throughout the 14-hour days that began around 7:30 each morning, 7 days a week, roughly 20 trucks and vans, that's Amazon, FedEx, UPS, and the United States Postal Service, delivered between 700 and 1,200 packages from all over the world to a 30,000-square-foot ballroom inside Disney World's Coronado Springs Resort. That's every day. A team of 9 was then tasked with sorting the packages, sanitizing them with disinfectant mist, and then after, they're cleaned and ready to be distributed. The boxes headed to each of the hotels on practice sites in disinfected vans that could hold about 200 packages apiece, steered by drivers who were tested daily for the coronavirus.
Yeah, which is crazy. A team of 9 has to sort all that in a day? Like, come on. Shouts out to those employees, NBA logistics, for handling that. But we discovered something else. What was inside those packages? You know what I'm saying? We found out that the majority of the packages were wine. And several wine clubs were formed during the bubble. I mean, you know, one of our favorite movies is Bad Boys 2. All I keep thinking about is Joseph is a wine connoisseur. So the National Basketball Players Association source said that the union will be facilitating the delivery of wine from Frescobaldi, which represents a number of famed Italian wines, to all 22 player reps as a collective gift for everyone on their representative team to share. The source added that the Players Association will also offer Sherlyn Champagne, Isaiah Thomas's personal brand, and the official champagne of the National Basketball Players Association. Amit, I did not know that the Basketball Players Association had an official champagne. Come on. I didn't know. But that champagne is presented as a birthday present to each player celebrating a birthday inside the bubble. Speaking of wine connoisseurs, Portland Blazers guard CJ McCollum's hotel room constituted a wine fridge throughout his time in the bubble because he kept his room at 60 degrees. You know how hard that is? Amit, you and I both lived in Orlando, Florida, where it gets up into the 90s on most days. He kept his room at 60 degrees. When he's in it, he kept it in the mid to high 50s when he wasn't in it, all in an effort to protect the 84 bottles that he keeps in boxes and out of the light. And for the most part, he got his wine, his Pinot Noir, from Oregon, where he's a member at several local wineries, along with the first bottling of his own recently released wine, McCollum Heritage 91, also in Oregon Pinot Noir. Sniff, sniff.
It wasn't just CJ who was a wine connoisseur. Blazers forward and former Knicks great. Yeah, I said Knicks great. Carmelo Anthony also is one of the league's most knowledgeable wine lovers. Yeah, I threw it out there. Knicks
okay,
great.
Okay.
But Melo knows his wine, and he brought a section of old world bottles from Europe into the bubble, according to McCollum. And sources said cases of additional wine were on their way for LeBron James, Jimmy Butler, PJ Tucker, and numerous other players who had their own special reserves that they wanted.
Man, shouts out. This just makes me think, man. Shouts out to Barbara Carr. You know, she's our local wine connoisseur. You know what I'm saying? She picks it out when we go out. So shouts out, you know, we had to do it right there, because that's all that makes me think about. It's like these guys are picking out wines, like they probably have a whole team doing research, going beyond the numbers of the wine bottles, the year, the vintage, the part of the region in Napa it's from.
And yes, so, my wife, the sommelier, does know her wine. She gets very angry when I ask her about it because she doesn't want to be bothered about it. And I get it. I understand that. But yes, I was in the same place. I was like, man, I can't imagine how much money they're spending on wine. So they must have some pretty fun bottles in there to try.
It's all percentage, right? Like these guys get paid. So it's like the percentage of their check that goes to wine is much different than you or I, my friend. So.
I'll tell you what, though. I bet the electricity bill to keep CJ's room at a refrigerator temperature pretty much was part of that $150 million that they had to pay Disney.
Did the AC ever come off in that room? Because there's no way you can keep a room in Florida at 55 degrees all day long. There's no way. It's impossible. From the bubbly to the bubble play, let's talk about some of the play that happened, some of what we saw inside the bubble. I mean, it was pretty amazing. The best team in the bubble was actually the Phoenix Suns. They went 8-0 in the restart, but they were kept out of the West's first ever play-in game by the Memphis Grizzlies, who entered the bubble in eighth, but ended up falling in ninth because it was Dame time in the bubble. We know that Dame Lillard was complaining. He did not want to go to the bubble unless they had a chance at making it to the finals. He made that very abundantly clear. And when given the opportunity, he did not disappoint. He made sure to get his team in that eighth spot. And granted, he ended up getting hurt and they lost in the first round, but he got his team into the playoffs. So shouts out to Dame Lillard. The National Basketball Coaches Association also polled its members and found heavy support for a more casual looking Orlando. I think they called it on it, when in Orlando, do as Orlando does, when in Rome, right?
Yeah.
So they went with polo shirts, slacks, and sneakers instead of, you know, you usually see basketball coaches wearing a suit and tie and maybe some sneakers, but suit and tie at least. But they voted to go with the when at Disney, dress as the Disney folk do.
It's a good change.
So let's get to some of the bubble awards. We told you guys we wanted to wrap up things for the NBA season. We wanted to wrap up the bubble. So we'll get to some awards. So rookie of the bubble, Michael Porter Jr. quickly emerged as the best rookie in seeding games. The 2018 draft pick who missed all of the 2018-19 season after undergoing back surgery averaged 22 points, 8.6 rebounds in the restart for the Denver Nuggets while shooting 55.1% from the field.
Comeback player of the bubble, Telly. So the NBA hasn't actually handed out a comeback player of the year award since the 80s, but the league's return after a four-month hiatus proved the perfect opportunity to bring this back for the bubble. Telly, you're going to have to help me with this name, because I've read it and tried to pronounce it a billion times.
Yusuf Nurkic.
But you, who's spelling Yusuf like that?
Yusuf does.
Well, Portland Trailblazers center Yusuf Nurkic, who hadn't played since breaking his leg in March of 2019, was a near unanimous choice for the award. Throughout the first seven seeding games, Nurkic averaged 17 points per game, which would be a career high for a full season, and 10.3 rebounds per game. So the man showed up.
Yeah, now sixth man of the bubble, when three-time sixth man winner Lou Will was quarantined because he had to have those wings, those lemon pepper wings. That's the best advertisement they could have asked for of all times, because I think everybody wants to know what wings are worth breaking quarantine and risking COVID for. Gary Trent Jr. emerged as sixth man of the bubble. He's a second year shooting guard who averaged 20.6 points per game on 57.6% shooting in 33 minutes per night off the bench in Portland's first five seeding games. Shouts out to Gary Trent Jr.
Coach of the bubble. We'll tell you, you said this earlier, but no one gave the Phoenix Suns much of a chance of making the playoffs when the NBA resumed its season. Phoenix entered the bubble six games back of the eighth place Memphis Grizzlies, needing to jump four other teams just to reach the West play-in game. All the Suns had done since arriving to Florida was go 7-0, giving them a chance to do the unthinkable. Because of that, Monty Williams was the easy choice for coach of the bubble.
And we talked about it, Amit, how the Suns may not have gotten to the playoffs, but they were winners, right? Because they went 8-0. They proved what they had. They proved their system could work. They got practice. They got work. That's a young team, and the future is very much bright for the Phoenix Suns, pun intended. They're like a phoenix rising from the ashes.
So moving on, bubble MVP. Telly, this is your boy. After he dropped 51 points and 61 points in back-to-back games, could it have been anyone else, Telly? No.
No.
Could not.
No, because you know what time it is. You know what time it was. There was never a doubt in anyone's mind who the bubble MVP was, and that's Dame time. Dame Lillard. Dame Dalla. Dominated, averaging 37 points a game. 9.3 assists a game, almost a double-double in Portland's first seven seeding games, helping the Blazers move into the eighth spot in the West and giving them a shot in the playoffs.
Right, we had some great players, some great comebacks, some great coaches. What was the best series of this entire bubble? I think hands we both agree on this.
Hands down. It was Utah-Denver. Hands down, the best series of the entire bubble playoffs, the best series, I would argue, and probably in the last couple years, because it pitted the NBA's future against the NBA's future. You got to see Jamal Murray's coming out party NBA superstar, legit. He had never averaged more than 20 points a game on it before this series. We got to see Donovan Mitchell's coming out party, although Donovan Mitchell had been establishing himself as an NBA superstar. These guys go off for 50 and 50 points in a series, never been done. These guys were breaking Michael Jordan numbers. These guys were making it look easy. Jamal Murray was having turnaround spinning layups. Donovan Mitchell was doing turnaround fadeaway shots. I mean, it was amazing to watch these two teams. And like we said, when you don't have a dog in the fight, Amit, it makes it so much easier to watch games. Trust me, because these Tampa Bay Rays are not making it easy for me. All these games are close and come down to the final out. But when you watching a series and you just get to watch talent, you get to watch guys grow up. And in a couple years, when everybody's talking about these guys, we'll get to say we got to see the start of that. We brought you some of the numbers in that series. We went beyond the numbers of those guys statistically in that series. And I believe that that will hold through history. We can look back on those episodes and say those guys were something special.
I agree. But changing gears just slightly, we have to talk about the NBA Finals. First game was a blowout. Second game was closer than the score would say. The Heat came to play in the third game, right? And you started to believe, hey, this could be a series when it was 2-1. Lakers came back, shut that down fairly well. And honestly, the injuries are the difference in this. I honestly believe if you had a healthy Heat team, this would have been a 7-game series, and it's a toss-up.
Yeah, injuries. I mean, injuries killed the Heat. The Heat needed every bit of effort. You know, I wasn't kidding myself. When I said Heat in seven, that's an uphill battle. That's an uphill climb, you know, and that they were definitely the underdogs. And, you know, I was having some fun with it, but they were definitely the underdogs. But when you're in that position, everything has to go right. Everything has to go right. The ball has to bounce your way. You got to get the calls. Everything else. It was just so unfortunate to see the Heat of all teams. I mean, most people can't name three players on the Heat. It's Jimmy Butler and friends. That's what they should call the Heat. Jimmy Butler and friends. Bam Adebayo is establishing himself as a superstar. But after that, you got undrafted guys who weren't wanted on other teams playing, and they lost their number two scorer behind Jimmy Butler, and they lost Bam Adebayo. So that's just not going to get it done against LeBron James, MVP, AD, league MVP, Rajon Rondo, finals MVP, Dwight Howard, defensive player of the year many times in the league, Kyle Kuzma, balling out of control, one of the top picks in the draft, one of the future stars of the NBA, and I can go on and on down the list. You can't do the same for the Heat. So it was just unfortunate to see them lose such big pieces so early.
It was fun to see Jimmy Butler have his moments, and just, you know, I think Spoelstra said, right, that what we saw out of Jimmy Butler is a champion before he becomes champion, right?
Yeah, and these are the growing pains. Like you said, we watched The Last Dance. Michael Jordan lost a couple years before he started winning, right? It makes it that much sweeter. Like, you got to lose to learn how to win. And I think these Heat, with the same exact team bringing it back, they got a chance, man. They're going to be a force to be reckoned with. Those guys are 22, 23. They got a young team. They all love each other, and you can tell, and that's contagious.
And it's the East, right? The East is definitely going to be the easier route. I think they've got a good chance. And, hey, that game five performance from Jimmy Butler, only 48 seconds of rest in the whole game.
My man was tired.
That man put everything he had to keep that team going. And he took that team on his shoulders and carried them.
He really did. And like we talked about last week in the episode, LeBron's Last Dance, right? We gave you a finals preview. I mean, I'm not joking. LeBron was looking old, Amit. I mean, no disrespect, you know, that, you know, people say that, but he was looking lethargic when they lost game five, I believe it was.
Yeah.
He was looking, him and Anthony Davis rolled his ankle, and you thought the series might change. AD's hurt. LeBron's looking beat. And the Heat are looking pretty good right now. And they came back and made a statement in game six to win game six. Like I said, to me, the heartbreaking part was they won the championship. That's good. You know, you tip your cap, however you feel about the situation. They earned it. The bubble was a difficult situation. Everyone's away from their families. I was just shocked that they didn't. The first thing they said wasn't, you know, we dedicated this season to Kobe Bean Bryant and the tragic loss. And we played for Vanessa and the rest of the Bryant family. I was really surprised. Jeannie Buss said it. She was the first to speak. LeBron got up there and started talking about, I want my respect. The Lakers want their respect. Love him or hate him, LeBron is respected. I mean, who does not respect LeBron? Who does not respect the Lakers? They have 17 championships. That's like saying, respect the Yankees. Nobody does not respect the Yankees. You might love the Yankees. You might hate the Yankees. Respect is not a word anyone argues whether or not the Yankees are respected and have enough to get it done every single year. Now, if the Rays ask for respect, that's different. We're in Tampa. Not a lot of people know us, know our team. But LeBron James, the most famous basketball player on earth, the Lakers, the most famous basketball team on earth, that's won 17 championships. They're asking for respect from who? Who's this it's, them?
It's and we heard this on PTI, right? With Tony Kornheiser and that team over there. He's trying to create conflict, right? He's 37 years old. He's 37, right? 36, 37. He's an old man.
36, I believe.
But listen, you're right. He is old. He did look tired. In game 5, he looked tired. But even tired LeBron dropped 40, 13, and 7.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm not taking anything away from him.
But
they
you're
won
right.
the championship.
But that's...
He won the championship. The Lakers won the championship. I would rather have heard him say, we dedicated this to Kobe, his family. That was heartbreaking. We wanted to get it done. We wanted to bring the championship back to the Lakers where it belongs, winning the first one since Kobe did it, rather than hear, like, respect me, respect the Lakers, pounding my chest. Like, come on, guy, come on. And those are the things, Ahmed, I think, you know, and Beyonders, we're family here, but those are the things I think that rubs me the wrong way about LeBron. You didn't really hear, you know, Michael Jordan, Scottie, those guys didn't say it. They just went out on the field and did on the court and did it. If you didn't like them, they could care less. Now, when you say, I don't care what people think, but you say, oh, respect, respect, I want respect. That's when you start rubbing people the wrong way, because like I said, love LeBron or hate him, I don't think anyone does not respect him. Love the Lakers or hate him, I don't think anyone does not respect the Lakers. They were the favorites in every series they played up until and through the finals. They were the favorites. Who disrespected them? Yeah. Nobody picked the Heat over them. Nobody picked the Jazz over them. Nobody picked the Rockets over them. Nobody picked the Blazers over them. So where is this disrespect? Who disrespected them? They were the heavy favorites. All season long, they were the favorites. It was them or the Clippers.
It'll be interesting to see what they do next year.
So now he's trying to bring in Chris Paul. So thank you, Rondo. Thank you for winning me this championship, Rondo, who plays point guard, and for being the second best player on the court throughout the whole playoffs. But I'm going to bring in my boy Chris Paul now. To me, like I said, I doubled down. LeBron's last dance, it's getting more difficult. And it's not even a shot at LeBron. The West is stacked. The league is stacked. The young talent is coming. And people are forgetting about two-time MVP, first and only unanimous MVP. Steph Curry is at home watching these games. No respect. Klay's watching these games. No respect. The Warriors were not mentioned throughout these playoffs or finals. They are licking their chops. How many times, Ahmed, in your prime, do you get a year off to get better, to get healthier, to get stronger, to get faster? That doesn't happen. They got it. They're getting a calendar year off to refresh. LeBron looked tired. If the season starts back up in January, that's 2 months. That's only 2 months, 3 months. Yep.
And we've already talked about the fact that he has an extra two seasons on him just from going to the finals and going into the finals every year.
Well, remember though, the Warriors have went 5 years in a row. So you gotta take that in consideration. My opinion, those injuries added up because those guys had played 5 finals in a row, and now your body has extra wear and tear on it. You weren't getting off seasons because you're winning the finals and having to come right back.
Yep.
So, you know, that your body over time, you know, starts to wear down. So just like LeBron has played in, you know, consecutive finals, look at how he came back this year. He had rest. He was hurt last year. They didn't make the playoffs. He got extra time off, extra time to get healthy, extra time to get better, came back strong this year. I think the Warriors do the same next year, and I think the Warriors have a great shot next year. They've been taking notes, man. They've been watching everybody else do it. Now they got time to put pen to paper and get back to it.
It'll be fun next season. I know it just ended, but I'm looking forward to the NBA in January.
And I think winners of the bubble really is the NBA, right? They got the league back. They got the league going. Games were competitive. People got to learn about new stars. People got to learn about new teams that you don't really watch normally. I think the NBA was a winner of the bubble. This was an awesome segment. We loved doing this segment. We really enjoyed it a lot. And we hope that we did justice to putting a wrap on the NBA bubble.
That's the news from the bubble.
News from the NBA bubble.
Bubble news.
Yeah.
Bubble news.
It's time for our new segment, NFL Nuggets, where we go beyond the numbers and bring you the stories within the story of the stories that matter within the NFL.
I have a fun NFL fact for you. The NFL played this past Tuesday night for only the second time since 1946. The last time they played on a Tuesday night was the Vikings-Eagles game on December 28th, 2010.
COVID's presenting some new challenges and also definitely seeing some different schedules come out. So we're going with the studs first, Amit. And Texans, the Texans. We talked about them last week. Don't mess with Texas and how the Texans are really Texans mess. The Texans with Bill O'Brien as their coach this season were 0-4. The Texans without Bill O'Brien as their coach, 1-0. Head coach Romeo Crennel, oldest head coach ever in the NFL, and he's been around for a long time.
Wait, how old is he?
He is 73, my friend. Black don't crack. Before him, do you know who the oldest coach in the NFL was?
Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll doesn't look 72.
Pete Carroll. No one guesses that because he looks good. He's always so fiery.
That's what I was going to say.
So, yes.
That's crazy.
Going with the bad man we told you guys about last week. I may have to drop another little, you know, another little Stephen A. montage in here. Aaron Rodgers is the only qualified quarterback this season who has not thrown an interception. He's still balling out of control.
And our boy Money Mahomes, the Raiders came in to Arrowhead and beat the Chiefs. Wild stuff. I had never would have guessed that would have played out the way it did. Partly because in David Carr's first six games at Arrowhead Stadium, he was 0-6 and he averaged 192 yards a game with four total touchdowns and seven interceptions in six games. This past Sunday, when they won 40-32, he had 347 passing yards, three touchdowns, and only one interception. And the Raiders became the first team to beat our boy Patrick Money Mahomes by more than 7 points. And Mahomes actually had a streak going of 40 games where he did not lose by more than 7 points.
Actually, Amit, it never happened in college or high school. So you got to go back to Money Mahomes Pee Wee edition for the last time he lost by more than 7 points, which is crazy. It is ridiculous stat. I'm sure he's going to bounce back. That's fine. But the Raiders do look legit. The Raiders look like a real team this year. They got a lot of speed, a lot of speed. Looks like John Gruden is getting things together there. The Browns are now 4-1. I repeat, the Cleveland Browns are now 4-1. Quietly 4-1. Quietly still a laughing stock at 4-1. When the last time they were 4-1 was in 1994, when their head coach was the Hoodie, Bill Belichick, and their defensive coordinator was Nick Saban.
When we talk about season to season, Nelson Aguilar had a change of scenery, and it's been working out well for him. Last season with the Eagles, he scored a total of three touchdowns. He has scored three touchdowns with the Raiders through the first five games of this season. It should also be noted, and this is crazy telling, out of the 231 players this season who have been targeted at least 8 times, there is only one player, and that player is Nelson Agholor, who has netted a perfect passer rating, which is 158.3 when targeted. He has been targeted 11 times. He has 10 receptions for 185 yards and 3 touchdowns. He's having a breakout year with them.
The Seahawks beat the Vikings without converting a single third down. We'll get to more on that later. But speaking of baller wide receivers, we got to talk about DK Metcalf. He is definitely a stud. He is on pace for 1,587 receiving yards, 16 touchdowns this season. Reminder that he was the 9th wide receiver, not the 9th overall pick, the 9th wide receiver selected in last year's NFL draft. Take that, Fadada.
This team knows how to draft wide receivers. Since 2009, the Steelers have not drafted a single wide receiver in the first round, but they have still managed to draft Antonio Brown, Emmanuel Sanders, Mike Wallace, Deontay Johnson, Juju Smith-Schuster, and most recently, Chase Claypool, who just happened to drop 4 touchdowns last Sunday. Absolutely crazy. And you should note that he's the first rookie wide receiver with 4 touchdowns in a game since 1979, and he is the first rookie with 4 total touchdowns in general in a game since 2012.
Sack master Aaron Donald has more sacks than 8 NFL teams. Those teams should come as no surprise at all. The Atlanta Falcons, the Raiders, the Jets, the Jaguars, the Patriots might be a bit of a surprise, as are the Titans, the Panthers, and the Lonely Lions, who are at the bottom of a lot of lists. Aaron Donald has 7.5 sacks, more than any of those teams.
Switching gears a little bit, I got a shout out to a Cowboys player, Andy Dalton, who took over for the injured Dak Prescott and ended up going 9 of 11 for 111 yards against the Little Giants. Dalton led a game-tying and a game-winning drive in the final 2 minutes of the game, and the Cowboys could easily win that division.
I mean, he's a backup, but he was a 10-year starter, and he was a baller with the Bengals for a long time, but I can't state enough how heartbreaking. I mean, I never felt that strongly about a player getting injured, like watching it on TV, like tearing up. And you could tell from the fact that Jason Garrett ran over, the opposing team ran over. I don't think anyone dislikes Dak in the least. I think every guy in the NFL cares and respects about that guy. Again, we just hope for a speedy recovery for Dak Prescott. And with everything he's going through with his mental health, physical health, we hope he comes back stronger than ever and stays strong during this time. We'll be praying for him. The Panthers are 0-2 with Christian McCaffrey this season. Since his injury, they've gone 3-0. Who would have thunk it?
But it's Le'Veon Bell, who was just released by the New York Jets this past week after 17 games with the team. During that time, Bell made $28 million. Which can be translated to any of the following: $7 million per touchdown, $1.6 million per game, $84,000 per touch, or $20,542 per yard rushed. That's a bad paycheck.
That is definitely not bad. Now he's gotten 2 years of rest, essentially, and he's free to move about the cabin and join any team in the NFL. Please, NFL, we beg you, don't let the Patriots get this man. Come on. Like, can we all unify? If you're tired of watching the Patriots win, if you're tired of not having parity in the NFL, don't let the Patriots get one of the best players in the league for dirt cheap, and they have Cam Newton for dirt cheap, and win another Super Bowl with no Tom Brady and no Gronk, and let Bill Belichick dance all over you fools. Do something about it.
I still think that the Chiefs may go after him. I know they have Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but I mean, Le'Veon Bell is a receiving running back. He could be another big piece in that backfield for them, and they've got the money.
So every team that doesn't get him, if the Patriots get him, every team in the NFL is a dud. So now we're going to the duds.
That's fair.
The Vikings had a choice in their game against the Seahawks. Another incredible game. I was watching my Rays. I was flipping back and forth, but I did see the last couple seconds of this one. They could attempt a field goal on 4th and inches on the 4-yard line and go up by 8. Or they could go for it on 4th down to ice the game. They ended up going for it and coming short. Option number 3, the Seahawks march down the field with my MVP for this season. I'm calling it now. I'm an MVP this season, unanimous. Russell Wilson, who has never gotten so much as one vote for MVP. How that's happened is a crime. Will be this year's MVP. Seahawks won on a last second catch by that man we called out, DK Metcalf.
And probably a little self-deprecating as a Giants fan, the last team to win at MetLife Stadium, the home of the Giants and the Jets, are the New York Guardians, who defeated the LA Wildcats on February 29th, 2020. The New York Guardians of the XFL. This is the first time that both the Giants and the Jets have started a season 0-5. It's been a rough run for both of these franchises. And while the Jets get a lot of ridicule from the media and other fans, I believe that the Giants have been historically bad based on numbers that we've shared on previous episodes.
Sticking with the Jets joined the 2013 Jaguars as the only two teams over the last 20 seasons to lose each of their first 5 games by multiple scores.
The Jags are also now the first team in NFL history to lose 3 straight games to previously winless teams. They lost to the Dolphins, who were 0-2. They lost to the Bengals, who were 0-2-1. And now they have lost to the Texans, who are 0-4. So that's
so Jacksonville is just in the league to make the New York teams look good.
That's right. That's right. But the Philadelphia Eagles, who put all their chips with Carson Wentz, that was their guy, right? They had another one. They said, nope, we don't want Nick Foles. Nick Foles, you can go. Carson Wentz is our man. Well, Carson Wentz has thrown 9 interceptions this season on 195 pass attempts. In comparison, Aaron Rodgers has also thrown 9 interceptions since week 3 of the 2017 season, which includes 1,442 pass attempts. Telly, that, as Stephen A. says, is a bad man.
Yeah, and Carson Wentz is also just a bad man. Let's wrap this thing up. We put a bow on the NBA bubble and NBA bubble news sadly coming to a close. Congratulations to all involved with the NBA bubble, and we congratulated all the accomplishments of the NBA bubble, the NBA bubbly, the wine clubs we revealed to you guys, and to the Lakers, who ended up winning it all.
In NFL Nuggets, we went beyond the numbers on week 5 of the NFL, and we discovered that the Browns may actually be good this year. Every time we think New York City football is the worst, Jacksonville cuts in on the party, and that bad man, Aaron Rodgers, continues to ball out for Green Bay.
Again, thank you, Natalie, my sister, for my birthday present, this new microphone. Hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. Amit, the game changer really is the boom scissor arm. I get to do this thing with no hands. And we're trying to grow the pod, so be sure to share it, text it, and you know what the question is, right, Amit?
Be sure to ask your friends, have you gone beyond the numbers in sports this week?
Don't be the one left out. Be sure you ask, have you gone beyond the numbers in sports this week? Thank you for going beyond the numbers with us. We're a weekly podcast dedicated to going beyond the numbers of sports and life to bring you the story within the story of the stories that matter. We're available on all major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Whatever you're listening on now, please be sure to click the follow or subscribe button to get our latest content.
And remember, you can find us on Instagram, Beyond the Numbers Podcast, and on Twitter at Beyond TN Podcast.
Until next time, peace.